From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 262 with guest Alan Sagano, recorded Tuesday, April 10th, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and you are listening to Run As Radio. Got a special guest today, bumped into each other back at Dev Connections in Vegas, Alan Sagano, who's the president of ADS Consulting Group, founded in 1991. ADS specializes in networking and every flavor of virtualization you've ever heard of. Server, application, workstation, you name it. Security, exchange, programming, web development. What don't you do, Alan?
I don't know. It feels like I'm doing everything.
It sounds like you're doing all the good stuff anyway. But in the mayhem of the Dev Connections conference, I think you and I got like 5 minutes to talk and dug into this idea of using the cloud as your disaster recovery strategy.
Yes.
So are you starting to do this in the field?
We've looked at it for a few clients, and we're right in the middle of doing a few implementations. For us, where the sweet spot is for using the cloud as a DR is somebody that doesn't have a alternate site to do recovery, or maybe they want to consolidate multiple sites into the cloud.
Right.
Another thing is they typically, disaster recovery cloud providers charge by the gigabyte.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have not a terrible amount of storage, it turns out to be a pretty good deal just because you don't have to pay for a lot of storage.
Well, the cost of standing up a second site is not trivial. That's a lot of money. I've built a few of those. That's not fun to do.
No, it's, you've got colo fees, typically rack fees, and then the SAN is a big kicker. And, all said and done, to even do a baby one, you're probably minimum, you're looking at $60,000.
Yeah.
And there's still
monthly fees associated with that. You probably, either if it's not rent, it's just the cost of the rack space.
Right, right. So, typically if you use the cloud, let's say your time frame is about 5 years, 4 to 5 years, you'll usually, and it'll vary, but you might save somewhere between 30 and 45% over building out the infrastructure itself. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's a lot of variables in there, and that's why it's really important to not only consider logistically what it is that you need to do and what your recovery time point objectives are and your time to recover, recovery point objectives are.
Right. How quickly can you get back up and with how much of your data?
Right, exactly.
So are we typically talking about a scenario where we literally want to be able to lose our primary data center and be able to get back into operation again?
That's the ideal situation. Of course, it'd be nice if the DR ferry could just come down and smack you upside the head.
Yeah, and everything would just work.
But what we found is that if you don't have this type of infrastructure in place, the DR plan, A, doesn't get tested at all, period, or doesn't get tested nearly as often as it should be.
Right.
So when you combine virtualization specifically with cloud DR, it really does give you an opportunity to do a test failover. And I don't, even the best laid plans, and when we, the first time we do the cutover, is usually a train wreck.
But that's true of your own backup site. You know, just because it happens to be owned by the cloud, I don't think that really changes anything per se. Failovers are hard.
Yes.
You just, and there's no substitute for practicing them.
Yes. And that's probably the understatement of the year. Failovers are hard. They're more like Uber, oh my gosh, train wreck, here it comes.
Yeah. Can we afford to take our business down for a while we figure this out?
Right, right. And the last thing you don't want to do is try to figure that all out during a real disaster because, you're already on fire and it's roughly equivalent of pouring gas on yourself while you're already burning.
For sure. But it sounds like in the scenario you're painting here, this is purely a virtualization play. Does that pretty much mean EC2 is our destination here?
The standard consulting answer is it depends.
Right.
Depends on the amount of automation you're willing to handle, and also what platform you're using, not only existing in your production, but what type of cloud DR platform you want to use.
Right.
The issue with EC2, and I talked about Amazon and for that matter, the Rackspace guys too, is, mm-hmm. is you know, if I have a virtual, you know, whether it be a Hyper-V host or, I mean, a Hyper-V VM or even a VMware VM, can I just take that and replicate it to the cloud? And
yeah.
The answer typically is no.
Right.
Because there's, well, you know, you have to do a conversion process and blah, blah, blah. So it's not quite as easy as just, oh, let's replicate it and light up the VM and I'm good to go. It usually doesn't work that way.
So it does mean you're building up a new set of VMs in the cloud space.
That's one way to go. The other way to go is that VMware has partnered with a number of vendors that allow you to do exactly that. And then it integrates pretty nicely with their SRM, their Site Recovery Manager.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like four vendors basically that integrate not only with SRM to do the replication. There's FusionStorm, Hosting.com, Island, and Verastore.
Okay.
Are the four main players in that space. So if you're already running ESX and you're running SRM, not only can you use it as your only DR site, you can use it also as a secondary DR site in case you're super anal retentive.
Right.
And things don't go right. And that would be maybe a good solution for somebody that has data centers that are physically, you know, in the same geographic area.
Right, yeah. And there is a possibility that both of them get taken out.
Right, simultaneously. Of course, a lot of times we have the client discussions we have with the client is like, you know what, if both of them get taken out simultaneously, I probably don't care because I'm not alive anymore.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's an interesting part of a DR plan to say what is the point at which it does not make sense to continue operations.
Right, you know, right.
That's a hard conversation to have, but I think it's, you know, it's about bracketing the problem.
Right,
you know,
right.
If the planet is being hit by a planet-killing asteroid, we do not concern ourselves with the SLAs of our websites.
No, yeah. That's probably lower on the food chain in terms.
Just got to paint a high watermark there. But I wasn't aware of this. So VMware now has a product offering in combination with these third-party companies to put your VMs on the cloud if you want them there.
Right. And it best integrates with their SRM product. And they kind of did some restructuring in terms of the price. Mm-hmm. If you have less than 75 VMs you need to replicate, then the price, the marketing price is $195 per replicated VM. And then it goes up to like, I think it's $395 or $495 if you go over 75 VMs.
Okay.
But then you have to buy support and blah, blah, blah. So the real price is about $250 per VM with support per year. And then about, you know, $450-ish or so for the ones if you have to do over 75. And that's just for the SRM license. And then, of course, in addition to that, you have to pay the cloud provider a monthly fee in order to replicate your VMs to the cloud.
Now, I think the hard part's got to be the initial replication. Some of these VMs are many, many gigs. Like,
yes.
So how do you get them up there?
That's a really good question. So one of the things that we recommend doing is, if you're going to do this, is get a fast line that's pretty obvious,
mm-hmm.
That's symmetrical, so up and down, because it's important to be able to replicate to the cloud. But at some point, you probably want to be able to come back.
Right.
And if you have an asymmetrical line, and typically upload is usually slower, but
right.
We recommend a symmetrical line, and we recommend a dedicated line.
Just for the DR side of things. But there is two pieces here, right? There's the initial massive sync, and then there's the maintenance, the steady updating of changes.
Yes, and just because... And our experience, too, is over the course of several years when you're doing this,
mm-hmm.
at some point, you're going to have to do a full replication again just because of
stuff happens. Right.
You know, WAN links go down, you lose power, you know, insert your lame reason here why you have to do a full replication. But
right.
It's just plan for it. And that's the reason why you want a dedicated line is that, although, yeah, you do take a big hit initially doing the replication,
mm-hmm.
You know, you, at some point, you're going to probably need to trigger a full replication, and then if it's not on a dedicated line, then all the calls come, and you know, it's
everything's slow. What's going on?
What
about networking via FedEx? Like, doesn't it make sense to grab a few terabyte drives, make snap copies of these VMs, and ship them to the provider?
It could be a lot. You know, again, it depends. Depends on where physically the data center is located. If you can even get into it, which is another issue.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're willing to do that for you, cloud provider is willing to do that for you.
Yeah, does that service even exist?
Yeah. So usually what we do is we just, and the other thing too is that, and I had a discussion with other clients, is that, you know, a fast WAN link does not equate local speeds unless you're talking crazy fast. So yeah.
This is not a 100 megabit connection.
Right, right. So, and we talked about that. The one client says, well, you know, we got a 20 meg connection. And I go, okay, well, remember, that's 50 times slower than a gig connection.
Right.
500 times slower than a 10 gig connection.
Yeah.
So
let's do the math.
It's all relative. It's all relative.
Yeah. But realistically, if we're, you know, going the route you're describing here, say we've got 50 VMs that are going to be 8 to 48 gigs each, it's a couple of weeks to sync everything up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even on a fast line, which is another thing that we look at also. In fact, we have the clients that are using the cloud extensively. Mm-hmm. We had a client that just moved, and we said, you know what, you need to move into an area that's got, that's covered with Fios.
Right.
Just because, you know, the price that you're going to pay otherwise is going to be so ridiculous. It's going to be cost prohibitive.
Yeah. It's an important point that you really shouldn't even try and consider this until you've got these massive connections to your providers available to you.
Yeah, you don't want to find out that, oh, yeah, we can do it, and then your WAN lines charges are going to be $1 million a month. It just doesn't make any sense.
It's not going to, you've undermined the whole thing. And I like the idea that it's a dedicated line so that you could clearly lay the cost of it at the feet of the product, right? This is here for that.
Yeah, and that's just cloud in general, too. We've had that discussion with other clients. Well, you know, can't we just put everything in the cloud? It'll be great. It's like, well, you know, how are you going to get there, and how much data are you pulling? And so for just cloud in general, we recommend that you have at least two redundant connections, if not more, and they need to be fast and stable and reliable, and ideally on separate technologies. So in other words, maybe traditional telco with cable modem or Fios or something that's not the same, so that if the central office gets hit, you're not going to get completely barbecued.
Reminds me of the story where we pulled two totally separate connections for an office, but they both went down the same telephone pole, the one the truck hit.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, what a great day that was. I love it.
Yeah, so there's still single points of failure, unfortunately, sometimes.
Yeah. Can we run that down the other side of the building? Yeah. How about that? Let's do that. Okay.
I know it's radical. I'm just going to put it out there.
Just going to put it out there. You know, what the heck? Let's live large. I guess the other question here is, VMware's clearly got the technology with their product to maintain, what's the synchronization rate? How far behind are the VMs in the remote site?
Well, and again, standard answer is it depends. So it depends on how fast your line is, and then you also set up these protection groups when you use SRM, and you basically give, you know, you can assign priorities, so, you know, these VMs are super important. They need to get replicated much quicker on a much more frequent basis than the other ones. The other question that I get a lot of is, you know, how much bandwidth do I actually need?
Yeah.
So we usually, and this, of course, this is really rough, but at least it will get you in the ballpark. What we recommend doing is, you know, run an incremental backup of your infrastructure, and that'll give you at least an idea of the delta change between, how much data is actually changing on the VM. And then you can use that to figure out, okay, you know, if my backups are a gig a day, that's about roughly how much I need to replicate. And of course, it's going to change depending on how frequently you do your VMs.
And how up to date you want to be.
How up to date you want to be. If you're doing block level replication or in SRM, there's two ways you can actually replicate. You can replicate using SAN-based replication, which is way more efficient because it's block level.
Yeah.
Or you can use vSphere replication, which you would use that in a scenario where you don't have a SAN, but you still want to replicate like a standalone host.
Right.
But then it doesn't do it at the block level, it does it more at the file level. It's still pretty efficient, but I would argue that it's not nearly as efficient as block-level replication.
Now, the only thing that concerns me about all this is I put my DBA hat on and go, all these replication strategies do not preserve transactional integrity.
Yes.
So when we start thinking in terms of DR for databases, do we look at the VM or do we really start doing a real replication sync or a transactional level replication sync?
You could, you know, even with the SQL mirroring and the stuff that's built in a SQL server, that's certainly an option.
Yeah.
You know, the scenario goes something like this. And as you know, this can happen as well. And we've seen this happen is the, you're doing trans, you know, log shipping or SQL mirroring. The WAN link goes down, the queue backs up. And at some point you just go, you know, we just need to punt.
We need to resync. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the deltas are bigger. And that's problematically, that's probably one of the most irritating things about doing this type of stuff is that the WAN link is always the weakest link.
Sure.
Just because it just, and then although WAN managers and telco providers will swear up and down that it never goes down, it does go down.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times it's very minor. You know, it might go down for a minute or two, maybe once every 5 or 6 days, and usually nobody notices.
Yeah.
But things like that will notice. So we usually what we do is that if you're going to replicate and you're going to use something like SRM, you obviously want to make sure you quiesce the VM before it gets replicated. Mm-hmm. So basically stop the transaction flow, and then that way you can make sure the database is in consistent state and then do the replication.
And that mindset lends itself to sort of a daily backup, not like a 15-minute backup.
Possibly, yes. And again, it just depends on how fast your WAN link is,
right,
and how much data staleness you can deal with. And, you know, I would argue that the scenario goes something like this. Would you rather have the SQL server up and be 4 hours behind, or do you want to get it to the point where we are exactly are, but it's going to take another day or two to do it? So those are the types of, and I don't know what the right answer is there, because we usually look at that on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm.
For things that, you know, in some scenarios, yeah, it might make sense to not actually be 4 hours behind, but wait another 8 or 12 hours to get as close to the sync as we can.
Yes.
Which, you know, complicates the restore, and you might need to ship something off somewhere, blah, blah, blah. But,
well, and none of this feels like a hot failover strategy. These are all warm. Somebody's in the loop deciding when we're going to switch.
Yeah, which is another really important point, which is that regardless if you use the cloud for your DR strategy or whatever, we always recommend that the failover is a human-involved,
yeah,
conscious, we are going to failover or not failover.
Yeah.
The problem is that if you automate the failover process, the computer will never have the information that a human is capable of gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And we found that oftentimes, just because there's a minor blip, it's triggered a failover, and then it's a train wreck and actually ended up taking the client down longer than they would have if they hadn't failed over to begin with.
Yes.
So case in point, we had one client. It kind of like yours, you know, car hits the power pole,
yep,
power pole hits transformer, and transformer takes out power to building. Okay. So automatic failover, then the power comes on 4 hours later, and the people start, you know, end users, they start using the system. It's a crazy concept, but.
Yeah, they actually have work to do.
Yeah, they do. It's kind of odd, but.
Yeah.
And then they had, so now some people are in the failover site, some people are in the production site. And now some of the data is updated here and some of it's over here. So instead of them being down 4 hours, they ended up being down 12 hours
because
they had to kick everybody out, figure out what's changed, what hadn't changed, resync it back up, cut over to the production site. Whereas if they had just, you know, a human can call the power company and say, what's the ETA for the power restoration?
Right.
And then make a relatively intelligent, hopefully intelligent decision as opposed to computer goes, oh, power's off.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Yeah. And I think time, you know, understanding time to recovery is such a vague thing there. And
yes,
we haven't even touched on failing back, like how we actually get back out of the cloud. But I'm with you. I've never felt that hot failover strategies worked between data centers. They were just too risky.
Yeah.
For the same sort of reasons. They tend to go off when you don't expect them. I can live with it in a cluster, but not across data centers.
Yeah. And how many times have you discovered in that scenario that you're actually running in the recovery site and
yeah,
didn't know it until like
know.
A week later.
Well, even when you're running in a, is there anything more chilling than being notified by SQL Server that we've had a hot failover?
Yeah, that's a little scary.
It just may, yeah, it's a frightening thing.
It is, you
know,
a very frightening.
I've made a very important decision for you based on very limited criteria. I thought you'd like to know. And certainly without any explanation.
Yeah, so that's always very, very scary. So yeah, but you're right. We think that the decision to do the failover always should be a human involved, conscious decision.
Right.
Precisely for that reason. Mm-hmm. It needs to be controlled. And in terms of fail back, that's another good point, is that, you know, now that you've gotten to the mountain, it's like, okay, how do we get off of this thing?
Yeah. So, how do we get home again?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that SRM actually handles really well, mm-hmm. is it handles fail back really well, and you can actually do it gracefully. So there's actually two types of failover, fail back with SRM. One is, we actually want to cut over from, you know, the production site to the DR site. And let's assume for some reason that you can actually plan for it.
Yep.
You can just, basically what it does, it'll kill the active connections on your production site, do a final replication, and then you can cut over to the DR site.
So you're dark for a few minutes.
Right. Or maybe more than that, depending on, you know, what your replication strategy, how fast your WAN link is, blah, blah, blah. That's one scenario.
But you're basically quiescing all of the VMs, getting the last of the snapshots off them, hauling them to the new site, applying them all, and then lighting up the DR site at that point.
Yes, yes. And so that's one scenario, and that's kind of, you know, pie in the sky. That never happens. The other scenario is our production site just caught on fire and blew up.
Yeah.
And now we just need to roll with whatever it is that we can roll with.
Yeah, what have we got?
What have we got? And then that's the more traditional one. But, however, in fail back, it works the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So that once you're on the, let's assume that now your production site has magically become available, typically when you fail back, you can at least plan for something like that.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to cut off the access in the DR site. We're going to do a last final sync, and then we're going to push everything back over to the production site.
But just getting back to that, you know, if we really do physically lose a site, and I've dealt with a fire, you know, the last measurement I got from one of the servers was a hard drive complaining that it was 115 degrees before that wire melted through.
Is it hot in here? Or is it just me?
Yeah, is it just me? Yeah, I've kept that screenshot because it was like, yeah, the building was actually on fire.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, 3 months later, we've built a new site. We ordered all new machinery. We went to a new location. We stood everything up. And now you've got to begin the same process of synchronizing back to your, to, you know, it's as if this is now the DR site, even though it's going to be our destination site. And you've got to start everything from scratch.
Right.
And it's weeks to get everything synchronized. And you're still frightened. It's still a failover. It's still frightening.
Right. It absolutely is. And that's the other thing that SRM can do, is it can actually do test failovers in a protected environment.
That's nice.
So that you don't step on your production stuff, because you're right. One of the things of doing a failover, a lot of times the reason why it doesn't get tested is that because it is so risky.
Yeah.
It puts your production environment potentially at risk.
In danger. Yeah.
Yeah.
This section of Run As Radio is sponsored by Secret Server, the password management software for IT admins. Secret Server helps you manage local admin passwords and service accounts the right way. Get your free 30-day trial for Secret Server at runasradio.com/secret-server. You know, we've really focused on the VMware story here. Is there much of a story for this in Hyper-V yet?
I think they're just starting to emerge. As far as I know, there's really no equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
There may be some stuff coming out with System Center that's about to come up very shortly.
Yeah.
That may start to address some of these issues, but I haven't really seen anything yet per se.
Well, and the big thing is that the Azure VM story doesn't seem terribly real yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So from that perspective, you're talking about, you have to build, you know, if you're really going to use Azure, you have to build your products for Azure, and there's nowhere to go.
Right, because it's just one big honking instance of an OS. Yeah.
Although on the database side, with SQL, Azure, and so forth, that seems to have more possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of the conversations that I've had recently with a customer, after dealing with a certain cloud provider's 18-hour outage, mm-hmm. was, do I need to set up a DR solution between cloud providers?
Right. Well, oh boy.
I mean,
Yeah, I mean, it's a valid point. One of the things that we recommend that you do even before you go into the cloud is to ask that question up front so that you know that you at least know that you're about to get barbecued or potentially can get barbecued.
Right.
So that's one of the things that we ask is, okay, well, this is your hot site. You know, B, do you have a mirrored DR site? And then the second question after that is that, have you ever had to use it?
Mm-hmm.
How long was the failover? What worked, what didn't work, blah, 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 yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it is, and ideally, you know, you would think that we come kind of from the perspective that the cloud provider should be doing something like that.
Yeah.
And that should be integrated into their service.
Right.
You shouldn't have to worry about, oh my goodness, my head is spinning from the logistical nightmare that would have to come from getting two disparate cloud providers to play nicely in the DR sandbox.
We got serious about this. I think still, as much as I like the Microsoft product, they're out of the loop because they don't provide a real virtualization solution. I would think it's EC2 and Rackspace would be the two I could probably get getting along under VMware with SDR. That, to me, seems like the most likely cloud-to-cloud solution you could build.
I don't know. I would say probably, well, Rackspace, you could do it because you could just, well, I don't know. I would lean more towards actually one of the other four.
One of the four.
And then maybe replicating between those two just because.
So use two already, of those guys.
Yeah, two of those guys might make more sense. Although the right answer there is those guys should already be doing that anyway.
You'd think.
Yeah, but it's definitely a question to ask, which is one of the things that whenever I talk about moving to the cloud, anyway, a good majority of the talk is do your homework.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to find out, oh, yeah, by the way, that fire that went in the data center, yeah, you were pretty much down.
Yeah, it turns out both those providers were in that building. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
But when I look at real serious DR solutions like aircraft. You know, the A380 has two sets of flight computers.
It has redundant everything.
Redundant everything. They don't fool around. And they're different manufacturers. They're different programming languages. They're different everything. So it's not outrageous if you really want. Let's face it. There's nothing more compelling to an aircraft than uptime.
Yes.
But if you really want that kind of uptime, this should be a viable solution. And I would think that the great four, that those guys would want to make deals with each other. Specifically because they're different from each other.
Yes.
And that's what the customer's going to like.
Yes, yes.
Interesting problem. Okay.
Yeah, it is. And the other thing, too, I should mention is that SRM5, the difference between 4 and 5 is pretty significant. So I would say today, if you're going to try to implement Site Recovery Manager, do it on 5. Don't go there on 4.
Well, and I do feel like we're still basically breaking ground here. So every new version is a major version. There's not minor improvements right now.
Yes, yes. I mean, when you look at the way things, the replication and your options for replication and the jump between 5 and 4 and 5 is pretty significant.
Yeah.
But you're right, it'll continue to evolve. It's not perfect.
Yeah, I do feel like the database is going to continue to be the odd man out because of transactional integrity, that we're going to continue to use a different strategy for our databases and something else for the rest of the VMs.
Yes, yes. And a lot of times, it's just a question of how much data staleness can you handle. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing that you could do is, I mean, literally, you could get data staleness time down to like 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Just depends on how fast your stupid link is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always, you know, the link is the wink link.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny when we talk with clients and they say, well, you know, we want our data staleness to be 5 or 10 minutes. And I said, okay, well, it's going to, you know, cost, you know, $20,000 a month
to
buy a link that's that fast enough. It's amazing how their perspective, you know, we could live probably with 4 hours.
Right. It's $20,000 a month for 10 minutes, and it's $2,000 a month for 4 hours.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, amazing how I've dealt with that with website uptime, where everybody wants 100% uptime until they have to pay for it.
Right,
and then suddenly 99% is just not that bad.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it is what it is. But, you know, it's certainly something that makes the recovery a lot simpler if you ever have to do it. But the other frustrating thing is that, just doing, even when you have these products in place, it is still a challenge. I mean, and don't let anybody else fool you. It's still, even with SRM, to do the cutover and failover still is going to take you probably realistically, an hour or two, depending on how many VMs you have. And that's sure. If everything goes like butter.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a lot, an hour or two. Are you kidding me? But, it just takes time to do it. And a lot of it is not necessarily SRM's fault. It's everything around it. So
yeah.
All your routing tables and your DNS entries and updating those and, making sure your MX records now are pointing to the DNS, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada.
The list is longer than you think of all the little things you have to get right.
It is longer than you think. The thing of it is that if you don't have that, it at least makes it possible if you do have it. And if you don't, you're like, wow, this is just, this is, in a best case scenario, it's a day or two or three or a week project.
Yeah. But you can, one of the things that compels me about the cloud, and certainly I've done this with two disparate sites, was just moving a product across or testing, leaving the production product up and breaking the link and standing up the secondary with a different DNS entry just to see that it was actually running. We'll have to resync it again later, but we could at least light it up and see that it works and, take it through its paces without actually disrupting production.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the fact that we've messed with the replication strategy at that point, but we'll get it caught up again after we finish the test.
Right, right.
The other question, I guess, before we run out of time here is, one of the reasons I thought the disaster recovery to the cloud was so interesting is that the cost, while it's in the DR mode, is probably pretty low, that you're not moving a lot of bytes and a lot of CPU time and so forth. Until you actually light it up in production, and the cost will jump up because you're only paying for what you use.
Exactly. And this is one of those things that, and that's why you get the savings typically, is that it's just like buying car insurance. You know, you don't buy car insurance to go plan and get into a wreck. At least most people don't. But if you've happened to, you're really glad that you had it.
Yeah.
And the DR is the same way. So that's one of the major cost advantages, is that it's data at rest.
Yeah.
Essentially, except for the replication. In other words, it's not actively running, so therefore the cloud provider doesn't need to have all of that juice there to be able to run those VMs.
Right. You're paying for that gig a day of transfer to keep it in sync and some CPU cycles. And certainly the big expense is storage.
Yeah.
You're still storing the whole site there, so that's going to cost you some money. But let's face it, when that site's actually up and running, it's the network and CPU that's costing you money.
Right. And that's the other thing that we also, for any cloud provider that's in the DR, one of the things we ask them is that, if we're going to be placed in X data center, how many people are also in that data center that are in a geographical area?
Yeah.
Same area. And the thought being there is that, if there is like an earthquake in Los Angeles and everybody's using the same DR site and we all happen to jump into the same pool and light up our VMs at the same time,
yeah.
Do you have the capacity to handle that?
Do we knock that down?
Yeah, you don't want to find out that they don't have the capacity.
Yeah. Well, and it's an interesting problem because when you provision it yourself, you're just duplicating sites. You know you have the capacity. You built it. But the illusion of utility computing, that it's just a tap and we open up the tap some more, it is an illusion.
Yes, yes. Unless your tap is tapped out in the first step.
So, yeah, interesting point. And I wonder if they even keep records of that. Do you know how many of your customers are using you as DR and are from this particular geographic region?
Yeah. I mean, it's a valid question to ask a lot of times. Like, well, I don't know. Let me get back to you. But
yeah, that's almost always going to be the answer.
Yes. Yes. And it is. But it's something that you at least then you know what you're up against,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to just, being kind of the ostrich with the head in the sand. Like, yeah, everything's great and
we're going
to be beautiful and fine until it's not. And, somebody loses an eye.
How often do we have this feeling that we're moving to the cloud because it gives us somebody to blame, right? I asked the question and they said it was fine. So now that it isn't fine, it's not my fault.
Well, the bigger problem with that is if you're, especially under SOX or HIPAA or whatever, is that if you place your stuff into the cloud and the cloud provider has a security issue or downtime or whatever, the company that put it in the cloud is still on the hook.
Still liable.
So it's actually almost even worse because even though you may not be responsible for the outage, you're still on the hook for it, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, it's a very tricky one of the sessions I talked about at the Connections conference was what type of data you should put into the cloud.
And, yeah.
You know, we were very, we're very wary of putting that type of, SOX, HIPAA.
But I also think that as IT professionals, it's not our call to make. We need to present these options to the board and show them we can save this money. We run this liability.
Right.
We can spend more money.
Right.
And reduce that liability.
Right. And that's the other thing, too, is that the ROI, and that's why we think actually DR in the cloud is one of those really relatively easy ROIs to justify.
Yeah.
Return on investments, whereas putting stuff, production stuff into the cloud, sometimes it makes sense, but sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Now, I think you hit on the classic scenario right off the bat. You don't have a remote site. And you're looking at standing one up and thinking, this is insanely expensive and kind of crazy when somebody will sell me what I need on the fly.
Right. And this is one of the areas, and actually where we feel it's kind of, if you want to look at the cloud, this is a kind of a more of the no-brainer ones as opposed to the other ones, which might be splitting hairs a bit,
mm-hmm.
Where it's like, wow, yeah, it really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You're adding a level of protection you did not have before for a reasonable cost.
Yes, at a 30 or 40% discount.
Sure.
That to me makes a heck of a lot more sense than putting your production stuff in. And we kind of had this discussion also. One of the people said, the attendee said, you said not to put sensitive data in the cloud. Well, technically it's in the cloud, but it's at rest. Of course,
yeah.
You want to encrypt it at rest, and the replication has to be encrypted, so data in transit, data in rest needs to be encrypted at all times, blah,
sure.
blah, blah, of course. But the thing of it is that it's not going to actively be activated. So, I guess you could kind of say it's like a fancy backup
mm-hmm.
that actually can run also
yeah.
in the cloud.
Executable backup.
Executable backup. It's a little, that's a little oversimplification. But,
yeah.
And then I said, well, look, if you actually had a scenario where you had to cut over to the cloud, in terms of risk assessment, it's probably riskier not to be up at all.
Sure. But, and again, this is business language. This is the conversation you have with the business owners. What's more expensive to you, risking the data in the cloud or not having the data?
Right. Yeah. So would you like to be completely dead or just, work with a broken arm? Most people would probably, if they could raise their hand. They would say, I'll take the broken arm.
For sure.
The alternate is just not that appealing to
not,
me. Call
not
me
acceptable. I mean, you could do the math. It's not like it'd be down forever. I've drawn out the plans for how we would order a new data center.
Yes.
And it's, it's a couple of months. If
yes.
we can, if we've got the insurance for that, if we could afford that outage, if we could step up the basic things like payroll just to keep them running enough to keep people
exactly.
fed, you could find your way home. This
yes.
is not the solution for everybody. But it's worth doing the math and presenting it to the board.
Yes. That way, when, heaven forbid something really does happen, you've covered your butt.
Yeah.
Remember that discussion we had about this? Well,
yeah, you agreed to this.
Yeah. In fact, we did have a client where, they had several hundred people, and we said, you had some exposure here. You really kind of need a DR side, and they kind of poo-pooed it. And they're like, poo-poo, whatever. You just want to make money, which is true. But
yeah.
And then the building next door to them burnt to the ground, literally burnt to the ground. It was
wow.
on TV and everything. And then it's just like magic. A couple weeks later, can we revisit that DR thing? The replication.
Really?
Yeah. Fire is just, like you said, it's a great selling tool.
Yeah. Well, and actually working through the real scenarios of what it takes to recover from those kinds of catastrophes. They do happen. They are not common, but they do happen.
They do happen. And ironically, the company that burned to the ground was actually an insurance company.
That is pretty
funny. And another ironic thing is they were in the middle of a sand-based replication for a DR site. So when the fire broke out. So somebody fortunately got over there, wheeled out their entire rack into the middle of the street. I don't think they lost anything. They got super lucky.
Yeah, brave.
One of the
saving racks out high on my list during a fire, actually.
Yeah, and because all the servers, were stacked up in the rack, they almost kind of insulated themselves.
Sure.
And so they actually ended up not losing anything, so they got super, super lucky.
Yeah,
but
I've actually gone through the burned out building and seen what happens to racks when they do completely burn. They're quite unrecognizable. They're just a pile. They're just puddles of metal. That is very cheap metal they make racks out of. And when it gets hot enough, it melts. Big old pile of goo.
Yeah, it's not good. Well, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't think anything in here is salvageable.
Yeah, not thinking, no.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
Alan, definitely. It's been good fun talking to you. I appreciate your insights.
Okay, no problem. Yeah, it was really great seeing you at Connections. Thanks for having me back on Run As Radio.
Yeah, I'll see you again in the fall, the next event.
Okay, excellent.
All right, and we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.